to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, let's rock and roll. It's Saturday night, August 27th. We are live, as you know, where we're going to be on a Saturday night at this time, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. We are at the place where we always are, AM 1380, of course, WLRM Radio Studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. The Political Cesspool Radio program is live, unrehearsed and uncensored. We are red hot and rolling tonight. Hurricane Irene blowing through the East Coast. We're blowing through your airwaves around the world and across the country on the Liberty News Radio Network. I'm your host, James Edwards, joining me in studio tonight for our first hour, Keith Alexander, and we have got another barn burner for you this evening, my friends. Thank you for joining us once again on the Political Cesspool Radio program as we go out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. And if you're listening to us online, you must be at our official internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keith, as I mentioned, Hurricane Irene is currently going through Virginia, the D.C. area, making a beeline up to the New Jersey, New York area. So right now, Hurricane Irene is blowing through the nation's capital and its surrounding vicinities, but that is nothing compared to what's going to happen to Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks once I blow through there at the NPI conference along with Richard Spencer, Sam Dixon, Jared Taylor, and so many others. I tell you, Washington, D.C. is in for a lot of excitement over the course of the next 2 weeks between a hurricane and me. Who's going to cause more damage, Keith?
I'm betting on you. And by the way, you know, now that they're being politically correct and they're naming hurricanes after men as well as women, do you have to call the male ones hurricanes or just hurricanes?
I don't know. When did that change go into and will hurricanes soon be homosexual?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, they had Hurricane Andrew and stuff like this. The feminists decided that anything that was assigned to women had to be, sexist or whatever they, you know, whatever their equivalent of racist is for a person that opposes feminism. So consequently, we now have male named hurricanes. And of course, one of the great byproducts of this hurricane is that it has put the kibosh on this love fest celebration for the official opening of the Martin Luther King Monument on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. that was scheduled for tomorrow. Quite frankly, I wish that they would have gone through it, and I wish that the hurricane had hit just at that moment as they were there raining on all these pompous a-holes that they have at the, showing up trying to, show their liberal bona fides by being there at that particular celebration. But quite frankly, that this whole Hurricane Irene thing, dumping rain and high winds on blue state America, as far as I'm concerned, it couldn't be better.
And we, of course, don't want anyone to be injured, and I know that there have been a few fatalities today, but hurricanes are always, I hate to use the word exciting, but it makes for good television anyway. If it didn't, there wouldn't be national news coverage of this. It would just be regional. But every time a hurricane comes in, it's a big story. And, of course, right now you got Hurricane Irene, which obviously pales in comparison to some of the more horrific hurricanes of this decade and this century. But it is a Category 1, dumping a lot of rain, a lot of flooding there on the eastern seaboard. And it's going all the way up to New York. And, good for them.
We have all these really bad hurricanes, 5 and 4s and whatnot, hitting red state America, and it's ho-hum. But when something threatens,
the black area.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, if it threatens blue state America and the Sons of Israel up there on Long Island in New York, well, then it's a total calamity, unprecedented in the annals of history. And as you see, we're getting wall-to-wall 24-hour-a-day coverage of this particular Category 1 hurricane because it had the colossal nerve to target New York City, James.
Which is a rarity. I think the last time they had a big hit up there in the Mid-Atlantic and New England region was 1991. And in fact, they made a movie after that incident called The Perfect Storm with George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg, among others. But anyway, I guess that's the big story in the country right now. If you've tuned into CNN or Fox News today. It's just wall-to-wall coverage about Irene. And really, as far as hurricanes goes, not that big of a deal. It was much stronger when it hit the Bahamas and the Dominican Republic and all that. Anyway, big story out of Washington, or what would have been a big story this weekend in Washington had the hurricane not come through, is the Monument to Greed there. Another memorialization of Martin Luther King, Reverend Dr. Esquire Jr. You know, he's got a street named after him in every city in the country. That is literally no exaggeration. A street you don't want to be caught on after dark in each of those locations, to be sure. America's most overexposed person, overhyped person. So they've got this big monument. You've seen it on the internet, I'm sure. There's been such hype leading up to this unveiling, and the official unveiling and debut of this was to have taken place. I think it's already taken place, but the big party to, you know, usher it in was to have taken place tomorrow. That's got postponed because of the hurricane. But you've seen it. They got it, just like everything else in America now. This monument was made in China, literally sculpted and designed by a communist Chinese who is best known for his work memorializing Mao Zedong. And so he's done this MLK monstrosity, and it looks very much, you know, the aesthetic of it looks very much like, you know, something you would see out of communist China. And, you know, it's just another way for the King family to milk the the false and phony reputation of the patron saint of America. They're cashing in to the tune of $800,000. They have charged the organizations and foundations that are putting this together on the National Mall. And this is going to be right there. It's going to be right there with Lincoln and Jefferson, and it's just right there on the National Mall, big time. And they're charging the foundations $800,000 for the use of King's, a couple of his plagiarized phrases in order to put that in granite on the monument there. You know, that's unprecedented, Keith, in the history of the mall. When I die and they go to make a statue for me on the National Mall for my work in radio, which they are inevitably going to do, as you well know, I can hardly see my wife or daughter, you know, that's an honor, right? I can hardly see my wife or daughter shaking them down to the tune of $1 million. We're coming up on break. When we come back, we're going to turn it over to Keith. As we continue to talk about the unveiling, we're going to be talking about this more in the second hour, too. The Monument to Greed, Martin Luther King being memorialized on the National Mall. We're going to have a big blog posting up on thepoliticalcesspool.org tomorrow to talk all about this. It's going to be our featured piece tomorrow on the website, so be sure to check it out tomorrow around 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when it's scheduled to post. Folks, it's and they're shaking down all of these companies, too. And these companies are ponying up big, big money, millions of dollars, in order to say they contributed to this thing. Of course, they're coming out a lot cheaper than if they didn't, and then they had to be accused of being racist. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. We're going to hear from Keith. Don't let me be misunderstood, baby. Don't let me be misunderstood. Please understand me, baby. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're kicking off tonight's show. James Edwards, Keith Alexander here in studio with you tonight during our first hour, talking about the Monument to Greed, the communist Martin Luther King's communist inspired statue that is going up on the National Mall. $120 million. Corporations across the country, including Boeing, Target, Verizon, Best Buy, DuPont, Exxon Mobil, FedEx, etc., $120 million they were shaken down for, and donations to help build this thing. The King family pocketed nearly $1 million of that just for their own, you know, just for their own pockets, so they could, you know, they said that was the charge for using King's likeness and his intellectual property, which of course he plagiarized from limitless sources. Anyway, Keith's been reading up on this. Folks, again, I tell you and urge you, tomorrow morning, anytime tomorrow, actually, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Featured there prominently for the bulk of the day will be an incredibly well-written article about this that comes from a political cesspool fan who emailed it in to me, and we're going to feature it tomorrow. But, Keith, the MLK monument to greed, what do you say?
I tell you what, this whole scenario, this whole farce, gives you second thoughts about buying American. If American companies are using the profits they make from your purchases in mind to give money to something as, you know, obviously anti-white as the celebration of the civil rights movement and the deification of Martin Luther King, then quite frankly, I'd much rather Toyota plow Ford under, and I'd much rather see Flying Tiger or some foreign company do FedEx in, because this is just, you know, this is the type of thing that just is disheartening, to know that all they have to do is push a button and all these people just bend over, grab their ankles, and take what apparently is coming to them. That is the power of liberalism in America today. That is furthermore what we keep saying time and again, the power of the civil rights movement. This is why the left always resorts to it. This is why the left, as we've said in numerous articles over the past, refused to let the civil rights movement die a natural death or even grow old gracefully. They've got to keep it front and center, because once they bring it out, both mainstream conservatives and liberals start genuflecting. They start going crazy. They start salivating at the mouth like Pavlov's dog. For example, look at this $800,000 given to the King family, which is basically his 400-pound progeny. I guess that will keep him in potato chips for another year, James. But this is they have patented or trademarked certain of his phrases. Most of his phrases, ironically enough, were plagiarized from others, including his most famous speech. You know, the I Have a Dream speech was done by some Unitarian minister up in Boston in 1954, and he liked it so much that he used it himself, and that's now his trademark speech. Also, just about everything else that he did, including his doctoral thesis, was plagiarized as well.
You know, I'd like to chime in with something about that, Keith. Now, it's just so obvious that the King myth is full of holes. One of the things that even the left is willing to concede now is that, yes, indeed, he was a plagiarist. But they justify his plagiarism by saying, that's black culture. And I actually read this in a... No, listen. No, I'm being serious. This isn't a joke. I'm not trying to be funny here. I mean, that's exactly what they said in a very major newspaper article this week. They were saying, like, well, a lot of King's detractors say that he plagiarized other authors. Well, they say, no. That's black culture, especially in black churches. And they said that he didn't, you know, it was borrowing, and that's what black preachers did back then, was that they just borrowed things that they liked, and that predominates in their churches and culture, and that, you know, there wasn't anything to frown upon about that. Every black minister does it. And so, they didn't really take it to the last full measure and talk about, you know, plagiarizing his thesis on his doctorate and so on and so forth, things that obviously honest people don't do.
Look, Martin Luther King's whole life was a fraud. The idea that he was some moral exemplar when he was a notorious whoremonger during his life, he was a plagiarist, he was an extortionist, and he was a communist. He basically, rather than giving up anything for his devotion to the civil rights movement, that was his meal ticket. He lived like a king, no pun intended, as a result of Communist Party sponsorship of his, so-called titular leadership of the civil rights movement. Now, of course, the Memphis newspaper has to genuflect along with everyone else, and they even devoted in today's commercial appeal an entire section, the M section, Faith in Memphis, Making the Most of Your Life. a whole article, not only a whole article, a whole section of the newspaper to the Martin Luther King Monument and the Civil Rights Movement and just how holy and wonderful it was. And in it is our old friend Claiborne Temple, you know, the site of Nina Taylor's prostration and genuflection before a random black man, in the most contrite terms possible, forgiveness for the imagined sins of her ancestors because she was a white Southerner. Now, let me just read you a little bit of this article by David Waters, who is a disgusting white liberal if there ever was one. I mean, this guy just oozes unctuousness out of every pore. In fact, he's now a part-time writer. The only people that get full-time gigs are Chris Peck, who is the main editor, and two black writers, Otis Sanford and Wendy Thomas. But, you know, David is still just as devoted as ever to, you know, this civil rights movement myth. And here's this article. It says, abandoned church holds place in heart of justice movement. The justice movement. Now, that's what liberalism is. Liberalism is the justice movement. Okay, be sure you write that down. A few days after he was arrested for participating in an act of nonviolent civil disobedience, the Reverend Benjamin Booker got a letter from a member of his congregation. She told him that a minister of the gospel had no business getting involved in demonstrations surrounding the 1968 sanitation workers' strike in Memphis. More than four decades later, the retired African Methodist Episcopal pastor remembers what he told the woman. That is a minister's job, to work for justice, Booker said in his Hickory Hill home. Okay, that's what used to be a white flight neighborhood that is now turned into a black slum, like so many others in Memphis. What did she think Jesus did? What did she think the gospel is all about? Booker is proud that the nation is paying tribute to another minister of the gospel. The Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial opened last week in Washington. They're trying to forget that it was all scheduled to open officially tomorrow, and they have postponed it or just, you know, forgotten about it because of the hurricane blowing through. Now, make sure that you understand this. You know, this basically, liberalism and Christianity are synonymous in the Right Reverend Booker's outlook, and that's the outlook that they're selling to all the churches, and they wonder why the churches are dying in America. You go there, and they're basically bound and determined to turn you into a liberal. Most people don't want to be brainwashed. Dr. King's dream was also God's dream, said Booker, a fourth-generation AME leader who remembers King saying, if one is truly devoted to the religion of Jesus, he will seek to rid the earth of social ills. Booker, who was among clergy who, now let me turn the page here, worked to rid Memphis of the social evil of segregation in the 1960s, is also pastor of the historic Claiborne Temple AME Church. We'll get back to this after these words from our sponsors.
Stay tuned, everybody, and we're also going to follow up on a little movie that Keith and I went to go see this week. You're not going to want to miss that. Much more forthcoming tonight in the Political Cesspool. As Keith said, stay tuned to these words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with you.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out
of this place. Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio program, where the topic of discussion for the first couple of opening segments of tonight's first hour has been the MLK Monument to Greed there on the National Mall, debuting this week. We're going to talk about it briefly for just another minute or two here at the top of this segment, then we're going to move on to some other matters, but we will revisit it in the second segment, and then, of course, there's still so much more forthcoming. I tell you, you know, we're in a fortunate position for one reason, Keith. That is, as paleoconservative commentators, the left never leaves us
with a shortage of things to talk about on this show. It just regenerates more and more every week. If you exhaust it all, they replenish your fodder by the time another Saturday rolls around. We will never run out of things to bring to our audience's attention. And that's another reason why we're in such a fortunate position, because out of all of the radio programs and television broadcasts that are covering the King Memorial and Monument this week, not one of them is doing it from an honest perspective. And once again, that's where we corner the market here at the Political Cesspool, as Keith said, except for us. Keith, back over to you.
Yep, this is exactly why, you know, the Civil Rights Movement is a gift that keeps on giving, because you cannot go a week in the national media or in the local newspaper here in Memphis, the Commercial Appeal, without finding some article to revive the Civil Rights Movement. It is just incredible.
We have a little system here in the studio now. Apparently, this has been adopted today. I'm on one side of the glass here in the studio, and Keith's on the other in the booth here. And if we got something to say, we just raise our hand and we'll point to each other, and we know whose turn to talk it is. But nevertheless, yeah, you're talking about the shakedown here with the King thing. It's sort of like the SPLC, and I know you wanted to talk about the SPLC and how it correlates with this. The Southern Poverty Law Center, if you look at their website, it says from 2000 until 2010, the last 10 years, in other words, there's been a 62% rise in the number of hate groups, quote-unquote, in America. So over the last decade, the SPLC says hate groups have increased by 62%. During that same 10 years, that same decade period, the FBI says that hate crimes have dropped by the same margin. So as hate groups, according to the SPLC, have increased by 66%, hate crimes themselves have decreased by the same number. Pretty uncanny, right, Keith?
Well, that tells you exactly. You know, you need to do what they said in Watergate and follow the money. Of course, the SPLC and this new Martin Luther King Monument Fund are right at the very bottom of non-NGO charities, non-governmental organization charities in the United States in terms of the integrity with which they handle the money that's given to them. In fact, they're both at the bottom or near the bottom because they spend all their money either paying it to the principals of the charity or spending it on trying to raise even more money with mailers and other things like this. Now, of course, the SPLC is going to say that hate groups are on the rise. Just like all of this resuscitation and attention given to the Civil Rights Movement is for the express purpose of telling the world that the Civil Rights Movement's job is not over. In fact, racism's as big a problem now as it ever was. That's what the SPLC is doing when they're saying that hate groups are on the rise. They want that because if it's not on the rise, then there's no reason for anybody to keep sending them money, and they want money. The second thing is, if racism isn't the responsible for black people not being able to get off the mat economically and otherwise in America, then that raises troubling questions as to why black people so obviously can't get off the mat, and it raises questions about their inherent capabilities, which the left and the black lobby in America doesn't want raised.
Excellent commentary, Keith. You're right on the money. They have to continue to have this crutch. After billions, and this is no exaggeration, literally billions of dollars spent in welfare, affirmative action, set-asides, all this goodies, all of the goodies that they get, and they are still not closing the gap in terms of achievement. Yeah, black poverty is still on the rise, bigger than ever. And they're still not closing the gap after, you know, 50 years of civil rights legislation and all of this free money, 150 years of freedom. They're still not closing the gap. They have got to have this crutch. This is why racism and so-called civil rights, you know, violations and throwbacks to the civil rights era, it's more in the news now than it was in the 60s, literally. And they continue to put it in your face by every means they have at their disposal, including a movie. You know, we talk about going behind enemy lines. Keith and I went behind enemy lines, and I mean deep. But sometimes you have to go behind enemy lines, because how else can you give an accurate assessment of what's going on unless you've seen it firsthand? So Keith and I, now, don't hold us accountable, folks. We didn't support it. We actually bought tickets to see Conan the Barbarian. We snuck into another movie, and we wrote a really big article about it, which you've seen at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's called Driving Miss Ditzy, a review of The Help, and it's been reposted to several websites, including Kevin McDonald's, The Occidental Observer. But Keith, this movie just goes to show, once again, the civil rights movement, always in the forefront, always got to be fresh in the minds. It's the biggest, single biggest historical, you know, incident in the history of the world. That's why we got to be reminded of it every single day.
Well, this is a perfect example of the truth of the new modern observation, less is more. There's less racism now than there ever has been, at least emanating from the white community to the black community. There is more racism now probably than ever before, as far as racism emanating from the black community directed at whites. You know, we've pointed out before that white on black rape is the rarest of violent crimes, according to the Department of Justice. Every year, the number is less than 10, which means that the actual number may be zero, because less than 10 won't register on their database. Meanwhile, there are over 37,000 black-on-white rapes in the United States every year, which is more than 100 a day.
And that's according to the FBI.
36,500, that would be 100 every day for 365 days, and there's 37,000-plus every year.
According to the FBI.
According to the FBI. That's not our statistics. That's government-generated crime statistics, okay? So consequently, they're doing less with more. In other words, white racism, like James said, there's more coverage of that today than there was in the 50s and 60s, when supposedly the bad old days of segregation were there. And liberals will not let it die. Just like Tombstone Territory was the town too tough to die, the civil rights movement is the radical egalitarian left-wing movement too good to be allowed to die. They are going to continue to fan it, and The Help is Hollywood's latest exercise in this endless enterprise. They keep making movies about it, like Driving Miss Daisy. I remember Hurry Sundown, which qualified for one of the 50 worst films of all time, made by Otto Preminger, again focusing on evil white racists in the South, tormenting humble, lovable, morally upright black people. You know, they set up all the same old bromides and stereotypes that were originally set up by Harriet Beecher Stowe and Uncle Tom's Cabin. Nothing's changed. They keep restirring it and recycling these stereotypes. And this is the latest one. And, of course, this one is, you know, really breaks a new frontier. I've never seen a movie where they had one of, you know, the people eating poop pie. But in this movie, we're all supposed to laugh when the sassy maid Minnie feeds a pie made of her own poop to Hilly, who is played by Ron Howard's daughter, you know, Opie on Andy of Mayberry. He's now a big shot in Hollywood, big shot director, producer, whatnot. His daughter wants to break into you know, showbiz too, so she was given this role, and she carries it off with all the nuance and human feeling of Cruella de Vil. In fact, she's a cartoon character, and almost everybody in the movie is a cartoon character. Of course, the most realistic portrayal is when Skeeter, who is Scout revisited from To Kill a Mockingbird, sells out her own kind to, what's this, a blue state Jewish liberal book publisher, who basically doesn't want to give Skeeter the time of day until she finds out that she's plotting some type of scheme here to get commentary from these black maids that will put white Southerners in a bad light. Then she's interested.
We're talking about the new movie, which is number one at the box office right now. It's made over $70 million in its first 2 weeks of release, The Help. Based off the book of the same name, it talks about how evil white people were in the 60s. What an original theme in the 50s and 60s. It talks about how badly they treated their black maid employees. Well,
White people are lapping it up, as we wrote in our article about this review, the review about this movie. Laughing, cheering at their own defamation and degradation. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue with more about our behind-the-scenes look at The Help right after this.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We're talking now about our review of the movie The Help, which stars Emma Stone. And it's about how evil white Southerners were in the South in the 60s, and how righteous black were. They were moral exemplars. They can do no wrong. They're intelligent. They overcome every obstacle that racist white Southerners put in their way. And we had Keith and I wrote together a lengthy review at thepoliticalcesspool.org entitled "Driving Miss Ditzy: The Political Cesspool Reviews the Help." You've probably seen it all over the internet this week. It's one of these TPC blog postings that went viral in our corner of the blogosphere, at least. And we don't have enough time to recap everything that we included in the review, which was quite lengthy, but a great read, if I do say so myself. And it's gotten very good comments from our fans and others. But you can sum it up by saying that white Americans have now incorporated self-hatred induced by the entertainment industry to such an extent, as I said before the break, that they can now predictably be relied upon to cheer at depictions of their own downfall and degradation. Keith, as we saw in the movie, as you just mentioned in the last segment too, Full House, half white, half black, all cheering at the idiocy of whites, all cheering at the gags at the expense of whites, and this included many of our own people. You would have never seen it. You would have never seen it if, as you mentioned, you know, one of the white characters, one of the black maids, feeds a white character a pie made of her own feces, and that's supposed to be a great joke. If white characters were feeding black characters the same thing, it would be a national scandal.
In fact, Eric Holder in the hate crimes unit would have to swing into action to destroy the career of whatever Hollywood miscreant had come up with that. But of course, Hollywood, which has eight major movie studios, all eight of which have a Jewish CEO, which means they have a liberal CEO, ain't ever going to make that movie. Let me tell you another movie they're never going to make. They're never going to make a movie in which a Jewish yenta, that's a kind of argumentative, bossy, know-it-all Jewish woman. Of course, I don't know where they get such a stereotype as that. They all over in Israel have Palestinians doing menial jobs, just like blacks were doing menial jobs in the pro-civil rights era South. Well, when am I going to see the movie where the Jewish yenta is fed a poop pie by her Palestinian maid and everybody is supposed to be yucking it up at the expense of the Jewish yenta? I don't think that movie's ever going to be made, James. And furthermore, you know, this ingenue, Emma Stone, who has come in as the latter-day reincarnation of Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird, she has so, bedazzled Hollywood that Jim Carrey basically opened his own website with what is a virtual proposal of marriage to Emma Stone. He's just all goose pimply. He's like a school kid with a crush. He's so crazy to link up with this wonderful exponent of just the type of liberalism that you would expect somebody in Hollywood to love. And of course, all the actors in Hollywood have to be card-carrying extreme liberals who just go gaga over the civil rights movement. If they're not, then their careers are over, as Mel Gibson found out. This is just crazy stuff, James, and it keeps happening all the time. People don't realize the extent to which the civil rights movement is the beachhead of liberalism. And if you try to admit that there's some good in the civil rights movement, that it was justified, you haven't got a prayer of, for example, overturning Roe versus Wade. you don't have a prayer of defeating the gay marriage initiatives or the homosexual rights movement or Obamacare or any of this, because quite frankly, you've let the camel's nose into the tent. You've let the enemy behind your, that you've allowed their Trojan horse to come within your fortress, and they're there and they're going to destroy you. That's what, see, all these people that were laughing at the help that we were talking about, you know, I'm sure that Marie Antoinette and Louis the 16th were very surprised when they were hauled out to the scaffold to have their heads chopped off. They said, they're not really going to do this, are they? No, that's exactly what these white people in the movie theater don't realize. They don't realize that this self-hatred and this mockery and degradation and this vilification of white people that keeps going on as predictably as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west in today's America, and particularly from the entertainment industry, it's, you know, like Bob Dylan said, a hard rain is going to fall someday if this type of stuff keeps going on, James. Better wake up and smell the coffee.
Why are you giving it to me? I'm watching Jim Carrey's video to Emma Stone here. You know, what are we talking about here? Well, anyway, folks, if you want to read, and I would encourage you to do so with my heartiest endorsement, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. That's the official internet website, of course, of this award-winning radio program that you're now listening to. And when I say award-winning, I'm talking about we're honorary Memphis City Councilman, certificate of recognition from the Memphis City Council. We've got all kinds of stuff here in the studio hanging up on the walls. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. We got a lot of Frankie Valli autographs in here, which to me is a lot better than being an honorary city councilman and all that good stuff. We got a few Pat Buchanan, you know, letters from Pat that he sent us, and you know, some thank you cards from Pat, and we got Neil Sedaka on the wall. But what we don't have is, so that just goes to show, you know, it's nothing personal. See, there's Neil Sedaka, is as Jewish as they get. We've got him hanging on our wall, so you know. We live and let live, right, Keith? I mean, we enjoy, you know, talent when it comes by.
Yeah, we don't have, as Grandma used to say, we don't hate anybody, we hate their ways. And quite frankly, if Jewish people suddenly turned out to be supporters of paleoconservatism and use the same effort, energy, and money to support what we support, then we would embrace them wholly. But we know that that's just not going to happen. So consequently, you need to know where all this is coming from. You need to be able to identify the enemy. You can't defeat an enemy that you won't name or identify. And for example, we were talking about Jared Taylor's new book, White Identity. He has a wonderful chapter on black racial consciousness, how blacks have the sense of racial solidarity that won't quit. Then one about Hispanic racial consciousness and how that won't quit, and he just, you know, gives you example after example and just lays it out with great detail and with great intelligence. Then he does one on Asian racial consciousness, and again they have a racial solidarity, and he compares this to the lack of racial solidarity that whites have. But of course, the one area in which wise men fear to tread, and Jared is certainly a wise man in that regard, there's no chapter on Jewish racial consciousness. And of course, all of liberalism, all of these radical egalitarian movements that have been going on in America over the past 60 years, like the civil rights movement, the sexual revolution, the drug culture, the criminal rights movement, radical feminism, environmentalism, yada, 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 all of these things, none of those things would have gained any traction, would have amounted to anything at all without Jewish power and influence. They are the yeast that makes the dough rise in liberalism. And if you don't understand that, or if you're afraid to say that, then you're just spinning your wheels, James.
See, that's why Keith is such a great co-host. I can give him such an inappropriate segue as, you know, we have an autographed picture of Neil Sedaka in here, and he can get into something like that. That's the talent of the man. You know, that's talent right there. That's sheer genius is what that is. But, you know, as we say, it's nothing personal. I mean, we have to bring out the truth. We have to tell the truth in love. I mean, that's our commandment from the good Lord. And so, You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But listen, we're in radio broadcasting. This is our business. I mean, you know, we work with Jewish people. Nothing personal, and not all of, you know, you've got people out there like Paul Gottfried, which, you know, they're about as rock solid as they come. We live in Memphis. You know, absolutely. We live in Memphis, one of the most diverse cities. Kind of like the NBA is diverse. The NBA is 90% black. It's a very diverse league. It got an A in diversity, 90% black. Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with diversity. It has the presence, you know, it has to do with the presence of blacks, as Keith said. But we live in Memphis, and, you know, our detractors give us this bad rap as if we're just evil troglodytes and we're Neanderthals and we're full of hate. You know, it's not like that at all. Again, it's nothing personal. We live around blacks, and, you know, when I run into one in a public or personal setting, I'm as polite as I would be to, you know, anyone else. But listen, we still got to talk frankly about the issues, right? It's a political show. We got 30 seconds, Keith. We didn't get to finish talking about the United States Slavery Museum. I'll have to save that for the second hour. But Keith, you got 10 seconds to wrap it up.
Yeah, we've got that with Doug Weiler for next week. But the thing is, we're not afraid to call a spade a dirty shovel, as my wife's grandfather once said. This is the show where we name them and shame them. We don't pull any punches. And if you want to see that in living color, stay tuned for the next 2 hours.
Perfect, Keith. That was beautiful. 2 hours of TPC forthcoming. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in a minute.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, "Something's got a hold on me." Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. Jumping pews and shouting hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.